This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Al Gore retreated after the 2000 presidential election. The symbol was the beard that he grew. But since his announcement that he would not run again in 2004, the former vice president has transformed his role in the Democratic Party. In August, he blasted the Bush administration's foreign policy. Yesterday, he gave a second speech in a periodic series, this one charging that the administration's reaction to 9/11 was unnecessary, excessive, and counterproductive, and a dangerous erosion of American civil liberties. His sudden emergence as the party's voice of criticism dusts off a political role not seen for a while. Joining us now is Professor Betty Glad, who teaches political science at the University of Southern California. She's with us. South Carolina. I apologize. I apologize. I saw that SC and I just made an assumption. She's with us from her office in Columbia, South Carolina. Nice of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
Happy to be with you.
If you have thoughts about Al Gore's new role in the Democratic Party, join the conversation. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. And Betty Glad, is there a history of former high-ranking politicians, presidents and vice presidents, criticizing their successors?
Absolutely. We have a myth that they don't. But if you look at all the presidents, former presidents, who when they resigned were in their 50s, they have all played a very active role afterwards. Theodore Roosevelt campaigned against Taft in 1912 under the a program that was more liberal, more progressive than his opponent. And then he ran essentially, then he had the formed the Bull Moose Party in 1912 and ran against Woodrow Wilson in 1916. He criticized Wilson. Essentially, he was almost going to run for president again in 1920, but he died, unfortunately, before that could happen. Taft went on to work for the League of Nations and talk about that and became Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. Hoover partook of the Hoover Commissions, which looked at how you could give the president more power to manage the government. And Clinton, who's retired at 54, of course, is speaking out on issues. But you know, it's also interesting because a lot of Republicans have done it, aside from the ones I've just mentioned. Ford, interesting enough, came out and was a co-founder of the People for the American Way because he was opposed to the moral majority taking over the Republican Party. Did you know that?
I did not know that. The curiosity, of course, is that this comes in the midst of a Democratic campaign to select a nominee to run against President Bush. And is Al Gore trying to steal the limelight here?
I don't think that. He may be preparing the way for if there's a loss for a future win. I think it's a little late for him to be entering to get the money now and to field all the delegates when so many of them have already gone in the field and people have made their commitments. So I think that, you know, he's setting himself up, if insofar as he's concerned about his own political interest with, you know, if they falter, what happens thereafter. But he also is sort of, in a sense, is trying to embolden the Democrats more generally and I think lead them into, I think, a very important consideration of this Patriot Act, which I agree with him. If you look at the particulars, does threaten American liberties.
Here's an email question from Wendell Brown in Little Rock. Has a defeated major party presidential candidate ever won the nomination for that party for the following elections? And if so, what was the result?
Okay, I'm trying to think.
My first name that leaps to mind is Adlai Stevenson.
No, Adlai Stevenson certainly didn't win.
No, a defeated major party candidate ever won the nomination for that party for the following elections.
No, not that I can think of.
So once they're out with their, I guess.
You know, as I said, you know, Roosevelt would have Theodore Roosevelt would have had the Republican nomination back in 1920 if he had not died beforehand. He was still a relatively young man then.
And I guess John Adams ran again, but for Congress, not for president.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So it can happen.
Okay. Let's get a caller on the line, and this is Martin, who's on the line with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi. How you doing?
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about what Al Gore said in his speech. I think that Al Gore hit the nail on the head when he talks about this administration's erosion of American civil liberties. Vis-a-vis the policy with the Middle East and Iraq, I think it's naive because we've been to several different locations, you know, worldwide to try and bring democracy, and they've all failed. And then sooner or later, those countries reflect inwardly and democracy follows.
Martin, you're talking. Martin's talking about what we spoke about in the earlier segment on President Bush's speeches last week on freedom in the Middle East.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Now, what about Gore's role as statesman, the standard bearer for the Democratic Party?
Well, I think I would distinguish between being a standard bearer and being a statesman, and I think a lot of presidents want to be known as statesmen, or a lot of former presidential candidates want to be known as statesmen. And they are. You know, these people are not simply running for office. They also have a real substantive, oftentimes passionate interest in politics. So they're experienced, and they want to talk about it. And I don't think we should always just look at their ambitions. So, you know, that's maybe relevant. I think that, you know, this is something that needs to be talked about, and it has not received the attention it should. And I think Gore's trying to, as a statesman, trying to bring it up to and put it on the public agenda. So, you know, I think that he has a real substantive interest in doing that, not just running for president right now.
Well, one of the reasons he retreated in the immediate aftermath of the election, the highly disputed election, of course, and declined all comment for quite some time, was that anything he said might well be perceived as sour grapes.
That's true. And then also, you have to look at when people are defeated, they oftentimes go through a period of depression. Carter did after he was defeated. Nixon did after he retired, and I think Gore probably did after his defeat. And they, what did I do wrong? You know, why didn't I make it? Why did the people reject me? And so before they feel confident again, they have to, you know, reassemble themselves and rethink their thoughts and what role they can play. And, you know, Nixon, after a while, became a statesman again and began playing that role. He had certainly no ambitions for running again, but he spoke out on various foreign policy issues.
Let's get a call in from Robert in Burlington, Vermont.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of Richard Nixon, you asked a question earlier about any candidate who lost the election and came back, and Richard Nixon, I immediately thought Richard Nixon. I was kind of surprised you missed that.
I am too.
Yeah, you're right.
and the amazing thing was is that, you know, he not only lost to Kennedy in 60, you know, he ran for governor of California and could not even win that. And then it was the you don't have Richard Nixon to kick around anymore thing. You thought you would think that he was like defeated and completely, you know, the stake driven into his heart completely. And yet he came back and with a vengeance in 68.
One of the things that I was asked about a successive presidential campaign, and there was that hiatus when he was vice president, which gave him a renewed stature.
Greg Camp wrote us an email from Nashville, Tennessee, saying William Jennings Bryan was Democratic nominee three times, starting in 1896.
That's true.
And George Madden in Tulsa, Oklahoma, said the answer is Reagan, who lost the nomination to Ford, but came back 4 years later.
Yeah,
but that's not quite the same.
He didn't win the nomination.
Though. No. Thanks very much for the call, Robert. Appreciate
sure.
it. And very quickly, as we wrap up this conversation, Betty Glad, there are nine other candidates, as we've mentioned. Why does the Democratic Party need Al Gore to be making these speeches?
Well, I think that these nine people have gotten so involved in criticizing each other, they've forgotten to address major policy issues. And I think they're hurting each other, and that Gore is playing a real statesmanlike role for the party here, saying, hey, guys and lady, let's focus on the issues and quit sniping at each other. And I think that's a very positive role for him to play.
Yeah, on the other hand, one of them has to emerge victorious over the others before he can start making the speeches that Al Gore has been making.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, I think that would be a smarter strategy to be victorious by showing that you can articulate issues the best. You know, if you go back to 1912, you know, that essentially between Taft and Teddy Roosevelt, there was a major debate about the new nationalism versus a more limited government. They based it on different governmental philosophies.
Just have a few seconds left, but would you be surprised to see Al Gore make a speech like this after a nominee's been selected?
Oh, I think that, yeah, I think he would. I think that I don't think it's practical for him to aspire to the presidential nomination now, so I don't think that's motivating him.
Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Betty Glad is a professor of political science at the University of South Carolina. She joined us from their campus in Columbus, South Carolina. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.